Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jason Prahl, and today we'll be mapping longevity on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I have Jason Prahl with me. Jason is a former mechanical engineer turned entrepreneur, filmmaker, and health optimization practitioner. Due to 20 years of his own health challenges, Jason was given the opportunity to discover the reality behind his symptoms. Over the years, he transitioned from working in the integrative disease care model to a model of health optimization and lifestyle medicine. In May of this year, 2018, these lessons culminated in a documentary film series called The Human Longevity Project, which uncovers the complex mechanisms of chronic disease and aging and the true nature of longevity in our modern world. Welcome, Jason. I'm thrilled to talk about the topic of longevity.
Wow, thanks for having me. I am too. This is a fun topic to talk about.
Let's dive in and really just define what longevity is, especially after all your research and explorations.
Yeah, I think this is something in the West, in the U.S. in particular, we need to, reframe in our mind the importance of longevity versus a quality of life, right? So do we really want longevity in terms of 150 years or 200 years if we don't like ourselves, we have no point to be here, we have no good relationships, we're poisoning the planet? Or do we want a really high quality life where we're enjoying each day, whether we're living this massive, huge Richard Branson style life, or we are at home as a mother or father with our family and doing the everyday things? So I think it's quality of life. It's enjoyment. It's appreciating the moment. So in essence, I think we need to forget this longevity discussion and instead optimize today.
I love that. I really think as I'm looking at the functional nutrition matrix, how we do that by touching into some of these key areas. And in your explorations, you visited and really explored and researched the blue zones. Can you define what that is for us?
Yeah, so there's a few areas around the world that have been sort of identified as sort of hot spots for people that live long, healthy lives, right? That basically age well and get to this sort of magical age of 100, maybe more consistently than other parts of the world. So, you know, there's some interesting takeaways from all that. And what we find is that, you know, all the things on the functional nutrition matrix, you know, the sleep, relaxation, the exercise, the nutrition, the stress and de-stressing and the ability to handle stress or stressors, you know, a lot of this stuff is what we find in places where we have this higher prevalence of healthy aging, and not necessarily the areas, but this is what healthy agers do, right? They kind of follow this model. And the other side of this is where actually the functional nutrition matrix comes into play, which I think is really interesting, is that they don't have to deal with half of this stuff.
Right.
Like detoxification. Like they don't have to think about it in the ways that we do, because, you know, when they grew up in 1942, Nicoya, Costa Rica, they weren't dealing with the toxins that we're dealing with today. So they were dealing with more of the biological toxins, you know, certainly some things in the environment, but not like we are today. You know, when we look at mind, spirit, emotions, and community, they were in a much more balanced place. So it wasn't something that the individual had to really focus on. Community was sort of baked into the cake, you know, connection, and their minds were focused on the task at hand. They weren't so busy. So they had better sort of emotional connection. So it's interesting to look at this and recognize that half of this stuff was already taken care of for a lot of these people. And the other half were what they did anyway. So
yeah, that's so curious, Jason. It makes me wonder about the left side of the functional nutrition matrix. And when you're talking about these blue zones and these concepts already being baked in, are we finding that the blue zones are still, do they remain blue zones in modern times?
Yeah. So this is, to me, this is the crux of the whole thing is that, you know, you look at a place like Okinawa, which has been known for its longevity, they're now, you know, according to Michel Pollan, and I just had a discussion with him, who's the demographer that was responsible for sort of identifying and confirming a lot of the ages in these regions. According to him, he would no longer classify it as a place that's known for its longevity because they've lost that as Western culture, sort of this almost American influence has come in with the McDonald's and the Starbucks and the technology. So the whole thing is broken, is being sort of squandered, if you will. And it's now manifesting in more disease. It's and lower incidence of making it to 100. So some of them, I think, are now disappearing in terms of the sort of longevity aspect. And then some are remaining the same. So if you look at the mountainous areas of Sardinia, they're still holding on to this tight knit, old school way of living where they're in touch with their environment, in touch with each other, slowing down, and all that kind of stuff. So to me, it's not about the area. It's about what these people are doing and what the culture is sort of, I guess, influencing them from a behavior standpoint in their local environments.
So in this way, modern living, as we know it, the Americanized version of modern living becomes both a trigger and a mediator. So even if we come in with these good genes from a blue zone, we are still being impacted by the triggers of modern living.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about, you know, even, you know, I know we like to demonize sort of Western medicine, right, in terms of a chronic disease care. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, even Western standard medical care has been responsible for, you know, living longer lives. You know, I mean, antibiotics, which, you know, in our community, we demonize in a big way, have saved millions, if not billions of lives. So it's hard to totally throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think we just have to approach things in a smarter way, even when it comes to technology. You know, this is now a new area that we like to demonize. And yet here we are having this amazing discussion through technology. Yeah. So I think this becomes the crux of the matter. How do we integrate these potentially harmful things and use them to our benefit without overusing them and causing problems? And I think this is going to be the new struggle in the West because we can never go backwards and be 1952 Costa Rica or Icaria, Greece. You know, nor would we want to. They had a hard life. They worked really hard and they didn't have the luxuries that we have and the opportunities that we have. So how can we take the good stuff that we've created, not overuse it, and step back into maybe a more moderate, slower, mindful, balanced state going forward?
I love the concept, and I'm wondering if you found any answers to that question before we move into kind of the central or soup of the matter. Is there anything you found, or does it come back to mindfulness in terms of how we approach our personalized living situations?
Yeah, so here's the thing. So I think changing your own environment is critical, right? And being mindful of all that. And so, you know, for example, after we get off this discussion, maybe it's good if I just go outside for a little bit and get out in the sun and touch my feet to the earth, right? And just take a few deep breaths. Like that type of mindfulness and balance can have a major influence, even though it's only 10 or 15 minutes. The other side of the coin is that what you end up finding is that people are products of their environment, right? And so the sort of the weird question that I've been asking myself is it healthier for me to leave the group and do healthy things,
right?
Sort of be excluded from the group and do all this weird healthy stuff that I know is good for me, or do I join the group, eat that cake, have a beer, have a laugh, enjoy my friends and family while doing the quote unquote unhealthy things? Which one's better? And I would actually argue that being with the friends and the family is really probably better for us, better emotionally, better mentally. And that actually changes our physiology, right? From a nervous system standpoint. So boy, it's tough. So we have to look at our environment and our culture. Hopefully we can start to move the culture into a more healthy state so that we don't have to leave the culture to get the health.
You know, I love this conversation because I think, you know, as for all the practitioners listening, we do need to help our clients and patients find this balance. And I always think about what you're talking about in the realm of risk reward or cost benefit. What are the decisions that we each as individuals are making in every moment? Let's say your child has celiac disease and they're going to a birthday party. they can opt in for that, Kate, right. But what do they opt in for? And I used to use that language, you know, before we were in the realm of internet marketing, where you opt in for a goodie, but like, how do you personally opt into a situation in as full of a way as you can, while also meeting your individual needs? So let's say I'm going out with a bunch of girlfriends and they're all drinking and I don't drink because the risk of that is not worth it to me, mm-hmm. or my body or my physiological functioning. So how do I still opt into the situation, to the conversation, put sparkling water in front of myself with a lime and lean in and have the conversation without feeling left out? So I'm really embracing the part of what you're talking about is beneficial without causing myself any harm. And I think that's a decision we each have to make individually with that knowledge. Again, what is the risk and what is the reward?
Absolutely. And I think another thing that we can do too, is to maybe reduce some of the seriousness, right? Like, let's not take ourselves so serious and let's kind of mock ourselves, make fun of ourselves, play with ourselves, you know, like, and I think this is where JP Sears, right? I'm sure much of your community is familiar with his stuff on YouTube and Facebook you know, he kind of mocks this whole healthy thing, even though he's very much in alignment with it.
Yeah.
Cause I think he's trying to bring play back into this, right? Like how we use coconut oil for everything. Yes. Right. And it's like, this is the stuff we need. We need more of just mocking ourselves and having fun with it, not taking it so seriously, but also not berating ourselves, right? So I think when you start to recognize that, you know, I'm wearing these orange glasses at night, how silly is this? You know, we're just kind of silly humans, right? And just have fun with some of this stuff. And then it doesn't become so, like, you know, so difficult to make these decisions. And if you just kind of let go a little bit.
So in the central part of the matrix, and we look at mind, spirit, emotions, a community, we're talking a lot about community connections and really that relationship and networks arena, how that supports us in our physiological function. And one thing you found in the blue zones was that people had this connection. What about the other arenas? Was there anything that was a commonality between the microbiome or the mitochondrial function that you found to be more diverse, amplified, functional than in the rest of the world?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. I think, you know, in some of the work that's been done on these longevity areas around the world in the past, they've mentioned community. Okay, but actually, I think that's wrong. I'll tell you why I think it's wrong, and I think it's important to a distinction to make. We all have community in our life, right? You might have an office or a church or whatever, even a family.
Yoga
right?
studio.
Exactly. And that's your community. But that's not what leads to health. It's not the community. It's the connection. It's the meaning. Mm-hmm. It's the realness of it, right? So I think you hit it on the head, and I think and it's an important distinction to make, because I can go online and get in the Facebook community. Right. I can have community all around me, and this is what we're going to see. We're going to see more community, but do we see more connection? Do we see more meaning? Do we see more purposefulness in those connections? I think that is the key. So I just wanted to really highlight that to build stronger connection within the community, I think is really the key. But, you know, in terms of the other things, I mean, this is to me the biggest thing that was missed in almost all the longevity research that I've seen is this this interaction with the microbiota or the microbial world. You know, we are a holobiont, right? We are less human than we think. We are more bacterial and viral genome and bacterial and viral cells than we are human cells. They carry out most of our function. When they die, we die.
Yeah.
You know, so this is when they go out of balance, we get sick and, you know, we get out of balance. So I think this is the most important part of longevity in my mind, and healthy aging is what happens either basically from preconception until 20 years old. Right. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the mom's microbiota. We're talking about the mom's mitochondria. We're talking about the birthing process, the breastfeeding process. We're talking about the child getting exposed to the natural world. This is, to me, the biggest thing that we are missing in this longevity discussion, is what's happening between preconception and even 10, you know, I mean, because that's fundamental. That's the development. So we need to get back out in touch with the earth. And this is what they were doing. You know, we have to remember that if we're talking to somebody that's 95 years old today, you know, they were born in 1923. So in a remote part of the world, in a village, you know, a lot of these people were born at home. They were born with not necessarily even a midwife, but there's just the community, the women in the community, right? And so, and one gal in Costa Rica was telling us how they, after birth, they would put the child out in the sun for just a few seconds to get the sun on their skin. I thought, wow, that's, and that's passed down through culture, through tradition, through understanding, through knowledge, right? Wisdom. This isn't like, oh, there was a study done in 1907 and therefore, right? Like, so, you know, they learned these things. And so they were much more in touch with their environment. And I think this is critical. I think this is key. I think we have run from our environment. We have excluded ourselves from it. And so, you know, we've been talking about this in functional medicine for quite some time, but I think it's not really been looked at in terms of the longevity discussions that we're having, you know. And I think there's so much more to learn. We're not there yet. We know some of the interactions, how microbiota talk to mitochondria. We know that microbiota talk to our DNA.
Right.
We know that our food has RNA that talks to our mitochondria and talks to the microbiota, and the metabolites from the food that are produced by our microbiota end up talking to our genes. So there's basically a bunch of genetic systems that talk to each other that help us understand the environment. And I think this is where microbiota come into play. They are short-term sensors of the environment. They're helping our human genome adapt to the environment in a very real-time way, whereas our mitochondria are more long-term sensors, right? They're going to adapt over generations and change. And it's like, okay, we're not in Egypt anymore. We are in, you know, Saudi Arabia. Okay, we're not in Saudi Arabia now. We're in Russia, you know? So it's going to sort of change as the generations move around the planet. And we see this through Douglas Wallace's work on the mitochondrial genome. So I think if we think about life as an adaptable, you know, thing that is interconnected, this is it brings us back around to the connection piece and the community piece, right? Is that we are all one. And if whatever we do to our environment gets mirrored back to us.
It leads back to how interconnected the whole inner system is, that when we're looking at the matrix, this is it. It is all interconnected. There's not one piece we can look at in isolation. So I'm wondering, Jason, I mean, one thing I just wanted to share that what you were saying made me think about was that I've heard Daniel Vitalis, who's, you know, earth guy, talk about how all, all cultures ate cultures, right? Like, so, you know, people ate cultured food. And I'm wondering if you found that to be true. And also, just in closing, if there were any other practices that you found to be either commonalities between people in the blue zones or just incredibly remarkable, like putting the baby out in the sun.
Yeah, I think this is what's interesting, is that culture develops for a reason, and it's generally for the betterment of the society. So in other words, the things that are helpful tend to stick around. And so what we found in Okinawa was a different cultural practices that were all beneficial for health, right? In Sardinia, you found different cultural practices that were unique to them that were beneficial for health, and et cetera. So each place had their own culture, they had their own food, they had their own food culture, and these things all benefited health. And when that culture starts to break down, because those are basically what we're doing with through culture is sharing wisdom over time. And so what it tells us is that there's not one way to live, right? There's just themes, right? And this kind of, I mean, this can go back to Joseph Campbell. I mean, you know, this is archetypal stuff, you know, and it's like, this is biblical stuff. It's the same themes that keep showing up over and over again, which is, you know, you're there for other people. There's this sense of connection, of purpose, of slowing down, of appreciation, of gratitude, you know, altruism. I mean, these are all the things that the Bible talks about, right? And it's just showing up in different ways. And so I think this is the question that we have to ask ourselves. How can we incorporate this into our lives individually and collectively in our own unique way? And there's just a million ways to do this thing we call life in a healthy way, but they all seem to involve the same stuff, you know, the same basics. And I think we just have to infuse more of that, because right now we're so screwed up in terms of our practices and where's our meaning? Our meaning's in politics, in you know, celebrity and the Kardashians and money and fame and popularity. We are putting our meaning in the wrong places if we want health and happiness, right? And this shows, you know, every happiness index and study that's ever been done, the U.S. ranks really, really low. Places like Bhutan, places like Costa Rica, where they have the phrase pura vida that is infused. Pura vida means hello. Putta Vida means it also has a deep meaning. So there's like multiple ways, right? So when and in Okinawa, they have a phrase before when they get food, they have a phrase that they say, basically this is, you know, thank you for blessing me and all this stuff, right? So we are missing this connection, this meaning. Our meaning is infused in the wrong places. If our goal is health and happiness, if our goal is fame and riches and convenience and all this stuff and quote unquote progress, then maybe it's in the right spot. It's to be debated. But I think if we want the health and happiness, we're missing some of these big concepts.
Thank you so much, Jason, for shining a light on this important topic. When we bring light to the practices that lead to longevity, we really do start to shift our perspective and work towards that goal. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, just go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. We'll be sure to drop into your inbox just with a short reminder that a new episode is ready for you. Plus, please do email us. Really, we'd love to hear from you. And I definitely want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what topics you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.